cinema. You are tuned to us on the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. And next we bring you program Music Box based on the film songs.
Thank you. Thank you.
are listening to the film songs in our program Music Box. You are tuned to us on the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. And it's our time for the News Bulletin.
This is All India Radio, the news read by Abhijit Loring. The headlines. Heavy polling reported in the fourth phase of the Lok Sabha polls. In Syria, government and rebel opposition accuse each other of using poison gas in the central province of Hama. 12 countries seeking to abolish nuclear weapons denounce North Korea's atomic program. Manavjit Singh Sandhu wins gold medal in the men's strap event of the ISSF Shotgun World Cup. Heavy polling has been reported from the 7 Lok Sabha constituencies in Goa, Assam, Tripura and Sikkim, where voting was recorded in the fourth phase yesterday. Between 71% to 82% polling was registered in the 5 Lok Sabha seats in the eastern states of Tripura, Assam and of Sikkim. In the 2 Lok Sabha seats in Goa, 75% polling was registered. According to election office sources, Tripura registered the highest 82% in 1 Lok Sabha seat, Assam 72% in 3 parliamentary seats, and Sikkim 71% in 1 Lok Sabha and 32 assembly seats. The Election Commission has ordered a re-polling in 33 polling centres in Bihar to take place today from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. The re-poll will be held at 19 centres in Jammu, 6 in Nevada, 4 in Aurangabad and 2 each in Karakat and Gaya. Additional Chief Electoral Officer R. Lakshmanan said that a majority of the centres where re-poll is being held are those centres where polling parties could not reach due to security reasons. The Prime Minister, Dr. Manmohan Singh, has said that the Bharatiya Janata Party has always divided the country. Hitting the campaign trail in Uttar Pradesh, Prime Minister Manmohan Singh made a scathing attack on BJP by describing its ideology as against the composite culture of the state. Addressing an election rally in favour of his party candidate sitting MLA Sanjay Kapoor in Pilbit yesterday, the Prime Minister said, BJP leaders want to give a communal turn to the Lok Sabha elections, but we all need to give more emphasis on national issues. Senior BJP leader and Gujarat Chief Minister Narendra Modi has criticised what he calls the vote bank politics and said that it is adversely affecting the development of the country. Addressing an election meeting in Barmer district of Rajasthan, Modi said desert area in the state has vast potential of gas, petroleum and solar energy and there is a need to provide better education to the youth of this area. In Chhattisgarh, 15 people, including 6 security personnel, were killed yesterday in 2 separate blasts triggered by Maoist in the tribal Bastar region. Our correspondent reports that Maoist blew up a bus carrying a polling party and resorted to indiscriminate firing. The incident took place near Bijapur district. 7 polling personnel died on the spot, while 5 others were injured. The polling party was returning to its base after the April 10 polling in Bastar Lok Sabha constituency. In another incident, Maoist blew up an ambulance near Darbha village in Bastar, killing 8 people inside the vehicle. Foreign Secretary Sujata Singh arrived in Beijing yesterday in the first leg of a 2-nation visit to China and Russia. In Beijing, she will review the entire range of bilateral relations, including plans for leadership-level visits in the second half of this year as part of Year of India-China Friendly Exchanges. She will co-chair the 6th India-China Strategic Dialogue with her counterpart, Vice Foreign Minister Liu Zhenmin. Sujata Singh will also call on Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. The Foreign Secretary will be in Moscow from the 16th to the 17th of this month. India has called for clearly communicated monetary policies by advanced economies. Economic Affairs Secretary Arvind Mayaram said in Washington yesterday that this will help build trust and improve business sentiments across the world by leaving little room for speculations. In his intervention at the G20 Finance Ministers and Central Bank Governors meeting, he said calibrated monetary policies, central bankers and between central bank and the market plus a willingness to listen to others are the need of the hour now. Mayaram is representing India during the ongoing spring meet of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. This is All India Radio giving you the news. In Syria, the government and the rebel opposition have accused each other of using poison gas in an attack on a village in the central province of Hama. Syria State TV said the jihadist Nusra Front Group launched the attack on Kafr Zeta village, killing two people and injuring dozens of others. But opposition groups quoted doctors as saying that an attack by airplanes led to suffocation and poisoning. These claims have not been verified independently. The Syrian opposition activist group, Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, reported that regime planes bombed Kafr Zeta with explosives barrels that produced thick smoke and odors that had led to cases of suffocation and poisoning. In Kuwait, the opposition coalition led by a former MP, Musallam al-Barak, has called for widespread reforms, including the institution of political parties in the country. He said that the reform agenda includes allowing people to run for the position of prime minister. Currently, prime ministers are appointed by the emir and are from the ruling family. Saad al-Ajmi of the Nationalist Popular Action Movement said that this is a national salvation program to salvage the prestige of Kuwait. The opposition insisted that it will use peaceful means, such as protests and rallies, to promote its message. Iran has said it will not accept the denial of US visa for its new UN ambassador and said it would take up the case directly with the United Nations. Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Arkachi told in Tehran that there is no replacement for Mr. Abu Talebi and they will pursue the matter via legal mechanisms in the United Nations. The United States has refused to grant a visa to Hamid Abu Talebi, citing the envoy's links to the hostage crisis in 1979. In South Africa, fights broke out yesterday in the township of Soweto between supporters of the ruling ANC party and activists from the opposition Democratic Alliance, DA, less than a month before the general elections. According to AFP, violence broke out after ANC supporters poured out of their houses to shout insults and throw stones and bottles at the DA activists. ANC President Jacob Zuma is expected to win the May 7 elections, even though he has been forced on the defensive recently over corruption claims. China has protested against a Japanese minister's visit to a controversial World War II Yasukuni shrine in Tokyo. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Hong Lei said in a statement in Beijing yesterday that China has lodged solemn representations and protests with the Japanese side. Japan's Internal Affairs and Communications Minister Yoshitaka Shindo yesterday visited Tokyo's Yasukuni Shrine that honors, among others, convicted war criminals, which is a brutal reminder of Tokyo's imperialist past. 12 countries seeking to abolish nuclear weapons yesterday denounced North Korea's atomic program, saying it endangered global stability. The Non-Proliferation and Disarmament Initiative, NPDI, at the close of its meeting in Hiroshima, criticized North Korea for its nuclear and missile program and urged the reclusive state to accept inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency and return to the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. The NPDI, launched in 2010, consists of Australia, Canada, Chile, Germany, Japan, Mexico, the Netherlands, Nigeria, the Philippines, Poland, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates. Noted filmmaker, lyricist and poet Gulzar has been chosen for the prestigious Dada Saheb Phalke Award for the year 2013. The multifaceted Gulzar, whose real name is Sampuran Singh Kalra, is the 45th winner of the Dada Saheb Phalke Award. A seven-member jury of eminent artists unanimously recommended Gulzar for the award. The award is the highest recognition of the Government of India for outstanding contribution to Indian cinema. The award consists of a Swarn Kamal, cash prize of 10 lakh rupees and a shawl. Indian shooter Manavjit Singh Sandhu has bagged a gold medal in the men's trap event of the ISSF Shotgun World Cup underway in Tucson, United States. Manavjit shot the scores of 121 and 13 in the qualification and finals to clinch the coveted yellow medal and pip two-time Olympic champion Michael Diamond of Australia. Indian grandmaster and former world junior champion Abhijit Gupta lost to Romain Edouard of France from a winning position in the fifth round of the Dubai International Open Chess Tournament yesterday. Romain Edouard is the new leader with 4.5 points, while Abhijit with 4 points has slipped to a joint second position with 5 other players including top seed Anton Korobov of Ukraine. Now to end this bulletin, the headlines again. Heavy polling reported in the fourth phase of the Lok Sabha polls. In Syria, government and rebel opposition accuse each other of using poison gas in the central province of Hama. 12 countries seeking to abolish nuclear weapons denounce North Korea's atomic program. Manavjit Singh Sandhu wins gold medal in the men's trap event of the ISSF Shotgun World Cup. And that is the end of this news bulletin.
This is the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. Next is today's commentary titled Pakistan National Assembly Adopts Anti-Terror Law. Scripted by Manish Anand, Principal Correspondent, The Asian Age, and read by Maria Albina. Soaked in terror bloodbath, Pakistan is seeking refuge in a stringent law to deal with runaway terrorism. The Protection of Pakistan Amendment Bill, which has been passed by the National Assembly amid opposition uproar, has split the civil society. Amid such hue and cry, the controversy has reached doorstep of the Pakistani Supreme Court. The main opposition, Pakistan People's Party, however, is opposed to the move to ask judiciary to decide a political issue. True Pakistan Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has sought mandate during elections for a decisive battle against terrorism. It is also true that mass killings of people in sectarian and terror violence are now a matter of routine. That perhaps emboldened Prime Minister Sharif to take tough measures, and he suitably turned to stealing arms of the law. Incidentally, the controversial law first came as an ordinance. Though the Standing Committee on Interior and Narcotics of National Assembly had approved the bill with some amendments, people are up in arms against it. They apprehend, and not without a basis, that it could turn Pakistan into a police state. Arguably, anger in Pakistan has much to do with a large number of cases of disappearance of people. That, of course, is seen as extrajudicial murders. Baluchistan and Sindh provinces, incidentally, are full of stories about disappearance cases. On the finer points, the law seeks to give more powers to security forces to tackle terrorism and to search and arrest apart from preventive detention of up to 90 days. Also, it excludes public from proceedings of the special court. Human Rights Commission of Pakistan quite rightly raised the alarm bell by stressing that the bill violated constitutionally guaranteed rights and legitimized illegalities. Listing red lines, Human Rights Commission said that the main concerns include giving authorities power to withhold information regarding location of any detainee or grounds for such detention, detention of a person in internment center instead of ordinary jails, creating new classifications of suspects such as enemy alien or combatant enemy, and enforce disappearance through giving retrospective effect to the law. So the Senate, the upper house of Pakistani Parliament, quite rightly anticipated pitfalls of such a law and rejected the ordinance. Therefore, Prime Minister Sharif, in his bid to keep the bill alive, rushed to the National Assembly, where it was passed amid pandemonium. As expected, a constitution petition has been filed in the Supreme Court by an activist invoking constitution and seeking annulment of the controversial legislation. Imran Khan, led Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf II, has vowed to challenge the bill in the Supreme Court, while claiming support of other parties like Jamaat-e-Islami and Mufida Qawami Movement. But the Pakistan People's Party, PPP, which is the largest bloc in Senate, has opposed the move to take the matter to the apex court. The party is also opposed to the bill, which needs to be passed by the Senate by June. The PPP had quite thorny relations with the Supreme Court when it was in power, so it does not want any judicial interference in matters which are in the domain of the Parliament. To ensure the bill becomes a law, Prime Minister Sharif will need to win over the PPP, but he will have to fend off judicial scrutiny, which may not be easy. But Sharif should know that unless and until state's umbilical cord with terror outfits is cut off, he cannot put an end to mass killings of innocents. For long, authorities there have exploited the psyche of existential crisis of Pakistan to nourish terror outfits with men and money. They have not only caused havoc in Pakistan, but also carried out ghastly attacks inside India and Afghanistan. And that must not be lost to Sharif as he endeavors to fulfill his electoral promise to end terrorism. As Pakistan debates the controversial law, the civil society will serve humanity greater by seeking course reversal in Islamabad's relations with terror outfits. Not only was Osama bin Laden provided safe sanctuary there, numerous investigations have exposed doublespeak of Pakistan in its fight against terror. You were listening to today's commentary titled Pakistan National Assembly Adopts Anti-Terror Law. Scripted by Manish Anand, Principal Correspondent, The Asian Age, and read by Maria Albina. You are tuned to us on the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. Next in our program, Producer's Choice, we now bring you an illustrated talk on the Songs of the Soil, Karnataka by Mithali Jagannathan.
Karnataka, the ancient plateauland of South India, is famed for its forests, its silk, sandalwood, ivory. Its folklore and music reflect the varied phases of its history. Many of the festivals are expressions of thanksgiving for a bountiful harvest. But the celebration comes after many months of toil in the scorching sun, and a song praying to the rain god to send down welcome showers, a farmer prays for relief to his parched land and standing crops.
Thank you.
The continuity of philosophy and folk wisdom was a gift of the Haridasas. These wandering holy men had a talent for music. They translated the lofty truths of the Upanishads into local dialects and presented them through popular ragas and pleasing rhythms. One of the greatest of Haridasas was Purandaradasa. He came to be known as the father of Carnatic music. His charming lyrics and kirtanas were sung in cottages and in the fields. The destiny of Karnataka was bound with powerful Muslim kingdoms of Bijapur and Bamani. Art, culture and music were encouraged. Splendid mosques were built. Gol Gumbaz, the biggest dome in Bijapur, echoes 12 times the softest of whisper in its gallery. In this period, Sufi teachers took to common folk spiritual concepts through popular songs. Mysore is known the world over for the grandeur of its Dashara, the 10-day festival celebrated during September-October. On nine nights, the goddess Chamundeshwari is worshipped. Darbar is held daily in the palace. Patron deities of learning, wealth and power are invoked through prayers. On the 10th day, the victory of the goddess over the demon Mahishasura is hailed with fireworks and processions. The Mysore Dasara is an occasion for the family reunion, dance and music. history, tradition, ceremonies and day-to-day life are reflected in the songs of the soil of Karnataka.
Listening to an illustrated talk on the songs of the soil, Karnataka, in our program Producer's Choice. You are tuned to us on the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. Here are our programs for tomorrow. Listeners in Australia and New Zealand can tune in again at 15:30 hours IST, that is 10 hours UTC. Transmission will begin with the news bulletin at 15:30 hours IST, that is 10 hours UTC. Followed by day's commentary at 15:40 hours IST, that is 10:10 hours UTC. We will bring you devotional music at 10:16 hours UTC. And you can also listen to a talk on Mahavir, the Apostle of Nonviolence, in program special talk at 10:30 hours UTC. Listen to the program Film Duet based on the film songs at 10:40 hours UTC and Day's Press Review at 10:50 hours UTC. Transmission may close down at 16:30 hours IST, that is 11 hours UTC. You are tuned to us on the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. Concluding this transmission from the General Overseas Service of All India Radio. Listeners in Australia and New Zealand can join us again at 15:30 hours IST, that is 10 hours UTC, tomorrow on 13,695 kHz on the 22-meter band and 17,510 on 16-meter band and 17,895 on the DRM mode. Our listeners in West Europe and the United Kingdom can join us again at 23:15 hours IST, that is 17:45 hours UTC on 7,550 kHz on the 41-meter band, 9,950 kHz on the 31-meter band, and 11,670 kHz on the 25-meter band. So until then, thank you listeners for joining in. Goodbye and Jai Hind.
This is All India Radio, the news read by Abhijit Lorang. The government has termed the killing of poll and security personnel by Naxals in Chhattisgarh as an act of terror and attempt to disrupt the democratic process. A Home Ministry spokesperson said in New Delhi yesterday, the CPI Maoists have killed poor teachers and other civilians who are part of the democratic process of India. This shows that the Maoists are just terrorists. The Home Ministry said the security personnel have laid down...